a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to be.
All right. That music means it's time for The Garden Conversation, which is heard here every Thursday morning and underwritten by Jewel Gardens in Skagway, in loving memory of Charlotte Jewel and her vision for the gardens as a community space for peace, inspiration, and education. Information at 983-2111 and online at jewelgardens.com. And today we have Melissa on the phone.
Good morning, Joni.
And also, I understand we have someone from Fish and Game in Juneau.
I think we have...
Hi.
Hi. Is this Abby?
This is Abby McAllister.
Hi, Abby.
Game and Juno.
I'm Joni.
Hi, Joni.
Thank you for joining us.
And Carl...
And Carl Koch from here in Haines.
Oh, hi, Carl. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so Carl's been busy with the moose hunt, and we're glad to have both Carl and Abby on today. So we're going to be talking about garden infrastructure projects to keep bears out of our garden. So good morning, and thank you for joining the Garden Conversation. A couple of weeks ago on this show, we talked about different ways to store the food that we harvest from our gardens, and that made a big assumption that the bears didn't eat our crops. As a remote community, basically at the end of the transportation line, many of us up here in the Northern Lynn Canal are really interested in growing food for food security reasons and many other reasons. But we're running into bear problems. We're losing parts of our crops, and unfortunately, bears are being shot. So today we're going to talk about ways to coexist safely and humanely. We're quickly approaching that time between harvest. Most things are getting harvested now, and the ground will be freezing up before too long. So it's a great time to plan for and actually put in some infrastructure to keep bears out of our gardens. We're hoping this show will also be rebroadcast again in early April, so when we're again in that shoulder time between winter and growing time. As gardeners, we don't want to get bored, so let's talk about some ideas for bear defenses that we can incorporate now. So Carl and Abby, what are some ideas you'd like to share with us?
Well, Carl, I'll let you go ahead and get started, and I'll chime in.
Sure. You know, the best idea, I think, by far, is an electric fence. And, you know, it's been used for years to keep livestock in, like large horses and cattle. And somebody figured out, well, geez, you can keep big animals out as well. And so it works excellent to keep bears out of trouble. You know, bears are opportunistic feeders. They come along, they'll gladly eat your apples or dig up your carrots and things like that. And once they get a reward, they'll learn gardens are a place to go look for food. And so anything we can do to keep them out, like you say, protect the food and keep it secure, would be great. And electric fences are, you know, by far one of the best things. They require some maintenance, just like the rest of your garden does. And but we believe in them so much that we lend them out to the public. We have a limited supply. I think we've lent them out to about 15 people in Haines this year, and then, of course, there's products in town and things like that. And, yeah, if you have any more questions about that stuff.
Just get in touch. Okay. Yeah. Abby, what kinds of electric fences do you recommend? Should they be tied to the house current? There's also solar ones. There's battery ones. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, every garden is so unique, and so it really does take the gardener should take a moment to look at what they have. How large is your garden? What does the space around your garden look like? And we at Fish and Game really do recommend, if possible, to you know, some people use a solar system to electrify their fence, but, you know, even in Haines where you do have a decent amount of sunlight, it's really a great idea to use a battery to power that that electric fence, or to, you know, plug it right into your home electric system if possible. And, you know, there's different types. You can have temporary fences, which is what we lend out to residents who want to borrow one and just see how it works for their space before they can get something more permanent. But really what you want to use is something that you can rely on. And, you know, again, making sure that you maintain it, like Carl said. So the larger the space, the more power that you will need to make sure that that fence is energized all the way around. And we recommend for deterring bears 0.7 or 0.10 joules. And again, that depends on the size. But and then the other thing to look for is when you're thinking about what type of structure you need is to make sure that you have enough space to put the proper amount of electrified wires. We don't want your bottom wire too high. You don't want your top wire too low. Bears can go underneath or over. And you want to make sure that it's always clear of vegetation and roots. You know, over the course of a season, obviously, we have some very great, you know, growing vegetation around here that grows quite fast. And so it's important to make sure that those wires are clear of any grasses or shrubs that might grow up over the course of the season, because what those will do is they will short out that current and make it so that fence is less effective or not effective at all. Yeah.
What I've done with that, yes, because I know that can be a real problem, I weed eat under the bottom wire, and then I also lay down cardboard that blocks the weeds so it's not as likely to grow up and touch the fence.
Oh, that's a great idea, Melissa.
And then also, you know, look around just to make sure, because sometimes vegetation in the wind will blow over onto the fence, and then it shorts it out, so it doesn't work then, yeah. What kind of wire should we be using on the fence? Does it matter?
So there's all kinds of wires.
Yeah, go ahead.
Some people,
Tom.
For permanent ones, sorry about that, Abby. Some people will use the 14-gauge heavy wire on, like, a permanent chicken coop or things like that, but you can use poly tape or braided wire, and they all work pretty well. The 14-gauge wire is a little more sturdy. The ones we lend out to folks is often either the poly tape or the braided wire, and some of that has metal sort of, you know, wound through the entire wire. Can even be cut and tied in knots and things like that.
How high is the bottom wire from the ground?
Yeah, you probably want to go about 10 inches or so. What you don't want is a little tiny black bear cub or brown bear cub to climb underneath and get stuck inside while mom can't get in there. In fact, that happened earlier this year in Haines with a couple of brown bears. I don't know exactly how they got in, but the cubs were inside the fence and the sow was outside, and it made for a tense few minutes till they found their way back out.
Oh,
that would be a giant mess, yeah. Is there any evidence that bears can learn to recognize electric fences and stay away from them by the type of wire that we use or anything like that?
I think that they learn very quickly. You know, often they'll come up and touch it with their nose or get real close with their nose and get zapped. I've lent out fences for bears going after chickens in Juneau, and in one case a person sent me a video. After we put the fence up, the bear never came within 6 feet of the coop, and I suspect it's because it had been zapped by some neighbor's fence that we had lent.
Huh.
They definitely can learn to recognize what an electric fence is, for sure.
Okay. So it hadn't encountered that particular fence, but maybe knew it from another fence, a neighbor's fence.
Yeah.
Oh, so bears have learned social distancing before we did. Okay. what other kinds of defenses do you recommend? Either Abby or Carl.
Well, you know, really, the electric fence is by far, I know we probably sound a little bit like a broken record, but really the electric fence is by far the most tried and true. You know, you could, if you, for whatever reason, your site was not suited for an electric fence, then we would recommend that you adjust the type of crops that you are planting. You know, and you might consider veering away from things that do have a rich smell when they're ripening. Of course, fruits are an obvious one, you know, apples and cherries as well. And carrots, when you pull them from the ground, they do have that wonderful kind of umami smell to them. So I would probably adjust your crop planting. Gear more towards things like kale, maybe sugar snap peas, or something that maybe the bears, it's not as calorically dense. Bears this time of year are entering into a phase of hyperphagia, which means hyper-hungry, essentially. And so they're looking for these nutrient-dense food items that are going to help them pack on additional pounds throughout the winter. And, of course, they have a fantastic sense of smell. It's like 7 times better than a bloodhound. And so if you aren't able to adjust your infrastructure to keep the bears out, I would adjust what you're planting so that you really are not attracting a bear to your garden.
Okay. So I had an experience, I think it was last year, where a bear came through my garden and took one of my cauliflowers, took one bite out of it, and spit it out on the lawn. Now, it was pretty funny. It was a big cauliflower with a bite out of the middle of it, and
funny.
Little pieces of cauliflower spewed about. We're another thing that we're running into is bears trying to get into buildings and garbage cans and cars and all that sort of thing. So what are your recommendations about that?
Yeah, so we've gotten a lot of calls about that. And one thing I will say is there's certainly more than one bear in town. But I think once a bear learns that a good food reward can be found in a building, it may go to other buildings. And a lot of the, I think there was 22 complaints for property damage in August. And I certainly do not think that was 22 different bears. I think, could have been more than one, but it's important for folks to realize that one bear could be going from shed to shed or building to building. And so for sheds, it's the same. It's like Gabby said, not to sound like a broken record, electric fences work really well around sheds. We do have another device called a critter getter that's a motion-activated alarm that can startle a bear and let you know that it's in the yard and probably not a good choice for a big garden because it'd be hard to protect every inch of it without several of them, and better to just guarantee they won't get the food reward. But for vehicles, we recommend people keep all the food and stuff out of them, keep them as clean as possible. It's a lot of extra effort, but, we do live in bear country, and this year it's been unprecedented with all the property damage.
Why do bears go and break down a door versus going through a window?
I don't know.
I would say that varies, if I could take that
one.
I mean, it really, a bear, it's driven by its nose. And so we are constantly moving in and out of our doorways. We are bringing scents in and out with us. And so I would... that is probably most likely where their nose is leading them, is to that doorway. But really what it comes down to is a learned behavior. And so in the past, if they found, dog food on a porch next to the front door, they're going to go to another front porch just to see if maybe just by chance that's the same thing. Or if they've gone to a porch where there's a freezer and they've been able to get a reward out of that freezer, they're going to head in that same direction. Doors, for example, there was the incident with the storage units in Haines. And typically, I apologize if you can hear my kids in the background there. Those doors were the weak point in that storage unit. Their garage doors can be a little bit more flimsy sometimes. And so sometimes that's typically just the weakest point in a structure, sheds, if you have a shed that's more built out of plastic, they're going to be able to break into that really easily. So why they go for doors, it might just be that that's where their nose is leading them scent-wise. But Carl, feel free to add on to that. That was my first initial thought.
No, I think you said everything great, but I don't want to listeners to assume that they don't ever go through windows. Obviously, that's often how they get into cars.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And there have certainly been sheds where they get in. And one other thing, we keep beating on the electric fence. A point I want to make is that every once in a while it doesn't work. And usually that's because it's set up incorrectly, or the batteries went dead, or bears are smart. If they learn where the wire is, when you asked about that, and they can figure out a way around it, they will. So if the electric fence is set around something and there's a tree that a black bear can climb and jump over, they can figure those things out. We've seen that in Juneau. But I guess my main point is folks that will have it, they'll set it up, and they'll bring it back and say it didn't work. And that doesn't happen very often, but it does. And, you know, if you had horses and they escaped, you wouldn't just give up. You'd adjust what you do and try again and find a way to make it work. And in the majority of cases, you know, with a little effort, the electric fence is going to do the job.
And what about those mats you could put outside your front door that are electric? Do you have anything like that?
We don't. Some folks really swear by them. They're, I think, a good thing for, like you say, a front door, although you got to be careful of, you know, people, right? And they can be used as the, you know, they can be used as a gate to a corral or things like that, but they also make great gate handles for electric fences that are cheap and easy to use. I think there's one person in town that uses both an electric fence and has a big metal thing similar to what you described with a very powerful energizer, and it works extremely well.
All right.
Wow. Well, okay, that's a lot of great information. Yeah, thank you, Carl and Abby. And I know, Joni, you need to move on here. So how can people get in touch with you at Fish and Game?
Yeah, you can call 465-4265, or my desk number is 465-4329. Or you can email me at carl.koch@alaska.gov. And
K-O-C-H.
That's Carl with a C, .koch@alaska.gov.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Carl and Abby. Appreciate it very much. And we all have some projects to go work on now. So.
Great. Thank you very much.
So happy to be on. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Melissa, for organizing this.
You bet.
Very informative topic.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was the Garden Conversation, heard every Thursday morning here on your community radio station, KHNS. Haynes, Cluckwan, and Skagway. Time now.